The award-winning Stand By Me team of Zane Velji, political campaign strategist, partner at Northweather, and the dulcet tones of the effervescently brilliant Tasha Carradine, principal at Navigator Limited and national political columnist for Post Media, and the hirsute, brilliant, erudite, well-experienced, silver-tongued medalark of politics, Tom Mulcair.
Does that mean we're getting your Hanukkah list at the end of the show?
Yeah, I'm so glad I got you at Thesaurus for Hanukkah, Evan. This is great.
Well, you do put the sore in Thesaurus, I'll tell you that, my friend.
Oh,
Zane Velji, Tasha Carradine, and Tom Mulcair are here. But I don't understand. You three are all interested in politics, and you. I thought of the one thing you learn in politics is how to take a compliment. They're so rare.
Was that one? It's just like a backhanded. Well, mine.
These are not. Yeah. You are so suspicious.
There's the words, and then there's the tone, and I can't. I have yet to decipher the tone, Evan.
Is that right? Do you feel that there's a sincerity lacuna, Zane?
No. You know what? I'm always bracing for the nice and then the upper hook at some point. So just me constantly tense and bracing for the other part of it. Just like I did here when I made the thesaurus comment.
I don't understand. I listen, and Tom's probably known me the longest here, maybe Tash, but I have been called Ernest as a potato. And we can talk about potatoes. Can we get?
Sense.
I am an earnest person.
Take it as a compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love potatoes.
At least you're not little potato. So. You know.
Right. Right. Oh my God. There's a lot. We are working on a lot of levels here, folks. And if you don't understand it, the good news is, nor do I. No, but little potato was Justin Trudeau's nickname in China.
Exactly.
Okay. Speaking of Trudeau, here's what he said today about China, and Tasha, as usual, builds the bridge to the segment. Here it is.
We are announcing today that we will not be sending any diplomatic representation to the Beijing Olympic Paralympic Games this winter.
Okay, so yes, Canada has now taken the lead, or as Obama used to say, leading from behind, from the U.S., the Australians, and the U.K., who have also done a diplomatic boycott. What do you make of this, Tash?
Well, I think it's the least we can do. I think that I'm not surprised. Well, maybe I'm a little surprised just because, you sort of never know, and no one else has gone out on the limb yet. I think the U.S. just announced this, I believe it was Monday, if not yesterday morning. So the fact he's followed suit that quickly is maybe a bit of a surprise. I think it's the right thing to do. I think that Canada and all countries that support democracy and freedom need to take a stand here, because otherwise, if you just say it's business as usual, well, you know, I'm sorry, this isn't 1936. People don't just go and support a regime that does horrible things. There you go.
Here.
Tom, do you want to weigh in?
I couldn't agree more with what Natasha just said. I mean, you know, the basic problem is, of course, when we agreed and our country, there was a close vote to give these Olympics to Beijing. And we went along with it. Then we already knew what was happening to the Uyghur in Western China.
Zane?
Yeah. And I mean, the most recent example that everybody gets is the young tennis player.
Yeah, sorry, continue. I lost you there, Tom. Go ahead.
I was saying that the most recent example is the young woman who was a tennis player who accused a senior person in the regime of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And she's basically been disappeared.
Yeah, Peng Shuai. Yeah, I know. Listen, there's no shortage of evidence, Zane, of human rights abuses in China, Hong Kong, the Uyghurs, the two Michaels, Peng Shuai. Is this all theater? Oh, the diplomatic boycott. We're all really taking a tough stand on China. Trade with China has increased, not decreased.
Yeah, it is theater, but I think it's necessary theater. I would agree with, you know, Tom and Tasha here. And I might argue with Tasha in the sense that I thought this was not quick enough. You know, rarely in politics do you have something that triangulates your domestic politics and the need and the desire of people domestically, especially with taking a tough stance on China. Your weakness internationally on the file, so a tough stance would help. And then they waited. I just don't understand. To me, it kind of speaks of the larger sort of lethargic nature of this Liberal government post-election, where even on the slam dunks and the quick wins, they just don't do it fast enough and in a way that, to your point, Evan, makes people notice. So sure, I'm glad they did it. I think we were going to get here anyways as soon as the U.S. Joined suit. But I would almost say that I think there was a real opportunity to highlight to people Trudeau's strength on this file. And rather than going for the slam dunk, they went for the layup.
Well said.
Yeah, here's my problem, and the media is as guilty of this as anybody. Everybody just does tactical thinking. Well, this is good. Let's do that, and then we're done. But let's think. The Chinese don't think tactically. They're not thinking about the next little tiny little win in a press conference, and then everyone goes home. They're thinking about long-term issues. They're thinking in much longer cycles here. I guess the question is, what is the strategy here, Tom, to do something about China? The point of a diplomatic boycott is to send a corrective action to China saying, look, you're on the world stage. No one can deny that. Look, you're here. Here's the problem. The world stage is dictated by a series of rules governed by universal human rights and the rule of law, not your rule of law. The rule of law based on human rights. They don't comply to that. My question is this going to have any corrective behavior on China's role or not?
Well, probably not short term, but overall, China is setting foot in so many countries right now, pushing people around. They've got a very strong presence. And if the Western world and the democracies of the world don't start pushing back and saying, these are not the values that we aspire to. We want a better world. And you're a bunch of bullies internationally right now. And we don't like your behavior. This is all this boycott achieves. I can tell you one thing. When I saw that the Chinese Communist Party reacted badly to the first announcement of the boycott on Monday with the Americans, says, oh, that didn't even hurt. You know, we don't care. Nobody cares about diplomats boycotting. Oh, yeah, they care. And this is hurting them. And it hurts their image internationally. And it was the minimum that we could do. But to Zane's point, I was just doing the same thing, hitting my forehead with the palm of my hand saying, so why did we take 48 hours to get on board if we knew this was what we were going to do anyway?
Yeah. So can I just ask, Tash, the one question that I don't understand, and I look, can we all agree this was the bare minimum, should have happened faster? This is the bare minimum. My question is, have we all lost our minds here? If the United States and the UK say there's a genocide going on, like if we knew, if the Nazis were having the genocide during the Olympics against the Jews, and we said, you know what, let's have a diplomatic boycott and go to the Olympics in Berlin. If there was a genocide going on in Cambodia, they were holding the Olympics, or in Rwanda, and we say, oh, it's a diplomatic boycott. We know there's a genocide going on, but we don't want to punish the athletes. Like, once you say there's a genocide going on in the country, is history going to look at this and say, how did the world believe that a diplomatic boycott was even remotely the response to a genocide?
Well, yeah, The issue is, and I think this is the point you asked Tom earlier, how much of a difference is this going to make? In reality, is this going to change things in the next, you know, months, year, week? No. China is angry. China is mad. China feels it's been slighted. But it's a cumulative effect of things. If you don't get the athletes to go, if you cancel it like you did in the USSR, the former Soviet Union, where the athletes were kept home, there's been a lot written about the effects of that and whether that actually was more or less effective in something like this. But what it did do was it really did dash the dreams of people who had nothing to do with this, who had spent their whole lives training for the opportunity. You know, I know a number of athletes. I know some who are going to this games, and I think that you have to strike a balance as well of what the individual bears and what the nation bears. And here, this is an issue for the Chinese government. It is not the Chinese people, and it is not the athletes. So let's put it where it is symbolic, but it still does matter. But what matters is if others get on board. And that's why, you know, the dominoes have to start to fall here, and I'm not seeing them falling.
Zane, go ahead. I know you want to jump in the last minute here.
I mean, you know, let's be clear. These are my Muslim brothers and sisters in China. And if we're talking about morality here, Evan, two big questions that history will judge us on. Do we consider all lives to be the same? And Canada's got two live wires related to that on vaccine equity and our participation in the Olympics and our relationship with China. And secondly, what is our communal and societal priority? Is it economic above all so that we treat a bully with soft gloves? You ask a very good question around how history will judge us. And I think those are two of the pillars that ultimately we will have to examine at some point.
I think the big question is we don't want to make the Olympians the instrument of foreign policy. But if they are, then it's unfair. But the problem is we have such a paucity of response to the Chinese action against the Uyghurs. Guys, let me take a break. I want to talk about borders, vaccines, and something going on in Alberta next. Stay with us. And it is that time of the week when we take these three geniuses, Tasha Carradine, Tom Mulcair, and Zane Velji, and we stick them inside the war room.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
Okay, the War Room has talked about the Olympic ban. Now it's time to talk about the borders, because the WHO yes. said, look, you know, we're not sure about this new virus. Omicron could be worse, could be better. Pfizer says actually our vaccines kind of work. And then people say, are these border measures prophylactic and political and the precautionary principle, or are they actually necessary? And then it doesn't matter because they're doing them anyway, and they may be screwing up on them. What do we know about if they're even – yeah, well, I just talked to a woman who was stranded for 4 days. What's up, Tom?
Well, I mean, I almost feel bad because last week I was praising the Liberals for having finally gotten one thing right at the border after having completely messed things up as the pandemic started. You know, I have a sister who teaches university in China, and she flew back as soon as she could to Vancouver. And she said, look, Tommy, at the airport, nobody's wearing masks. They're not taking our temperature. They're not even doing anything. And these are flights that are all coming in from Wuhan and Beijing. Nobody's checking anything. She goes, you guys are going to have a big problem. Yeah, she was right. So then the Delta variant hits. Oh, countries of concern there? No, we're not going to peeve off people who are part of our political base. We're not going to say no to those flights. So this time, first out of the starting blocks, boom, with regard to the countries of concern, no, we're going to ban the flights immediately. And there's going to be quarantine hotels again. And we're going to tell every airport in Canada to start having areas set aside to do all the testing. And then two things happened in the past 24 hours. The minister, I mean, you know, God bless him. I mean, our health minister, Duclos, looking at this saying, I am singularly embarrassed. Nothing's ready. This is totally unacceptable. Today, you know, I'm on the community consultation board at Montreal's airport. They're furious saying, we don't have any room to do any of this stuff. So there was obviously no consultation, no preparation, and no legwork done putting this thing in place. So I think it goes to your point, Evan. I think it's a clear indication that they were doing this for political reasons because they got beaten up so soundly for their bad handling of the borders in the first two waves.
So it's fascinating. So the airport's not even ready. And that's going to cause more chaos.
It doesn't have room.
That's incredible. Zane.
Yeah, listen, you know, you do what you're good at and you're good at what you do. And in this case, you can actually see the conviction of this policy not being there. This is straight up political protectionism from you know, the Doug Ford TV ads, from Aaron O'Toole having a lane to pick on to attack Trudeau. This is not what they want to do. And in fact, I sense, and this is where we get to the speculation part of the program, Evan, that if the Liberals could run amok, they would probably try to solve the vaccine equity problem more so than they would want to close the borders. But of course, they're trying to protect themselves domestically with the politics here. And then you see, you know, when you have a cosmetic policy, you don't do the through line thinking, the strategic implementation thinking, et cetera, all the things Tom just listed with the examples he put out on the table. I think this is just a pure cause of lack of conviction on the policy that they've put on the table.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't even understand what you do, what you're good at, and you're good at what you do. Okay. And then, but I also learned that Tom Mulcair is secretly called Tommy by his sister. What do you think about all this, Tasha? I like that, Tommy. That's good.
Yeah. We won't get into nicknames here. I think it's a hash what's happening. We're getting, you know, there's criticism that the quarantine hotels are terrible, horrible, and filthy. We're finding out that people at the border are getting quarantined or detained because they can't deal with the app that we have, the CanArrive app, including some elderly people, who, not to stereotype, but maybe are not as versed in the technology, or in one case didn't even know you had to do it. And then we have a situation, you know, at Trudeau Airport where we're told, well, it's too small, we can't test people. I mean, come on. Like, if you're going to make rules, be sure you can enforce them, and enforce them fairly. The CanArrive app is a perfect example of not being fair. Overzealous border guards are now being told to, like, okay, just, you know, calm down. And if people haven't completely dealt with the app the way they should, maybe you should help them do it instead of all of a sudden just slap them, into quarantine.
The question is, would you have done anything differently, Tom? Let's be candid. I mean, could they really have, not in the not knowing, you got to abide by the precautionary principle? Like, you know, I had Tiffany Gora on the program from Calgary. It was a nightmare situation for her for almost 4 days in quarantine. I get it. These stories are going to pop up. My question is, would you have done anything different? The government, I think they're doing the right decision. The problem for me is classic. Maybe this is classic for this government. They've had 2 years to get the switch ready to flip in case of emergency.
Exactly.
The emergency came and the switch doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, this goes down to a simple question of public administration, and they're not good at it. They're great at announcements. They're great at emoting, but they're really lousy when it comes to the nuts and bolts of getting things done in government. So what would I have done differently? Well, from the beginning, I think I would have hit that switch. It would have been ready, and we would have taken care of the first waves. When this one finally came, we would have known what we were doing.
Yeah,
I think that's the simple answer to your question, Evan.
Yeah, they should. Tash, the fact they didn't have a contingency plan, there's going to be another variant. When it comes, if we have to shut down, here's the hotels, here are the tests, this is what we do, go. Like, this was not rocket science, this was science. They knew this was going to happen, and it looks like they're like, okay, we're going to do it, but we're not even ready. The airports don't know what we're doing. Nobody knows.
Well, no, and there's no excuse now. We're almost 2 years into the pandemic. So, you know, we know the drill. Other countries are doing it. Can we not just find something that works and plan it properly and not just make rules and then not be able to? Because that's the worst. If people don't think rules are being enforced, they won't respect them.
When Zane Velji, there's news out of late into the night in Alberta. Now, people might think this doesn't matter to me, but I actually think this does because
it's wild.
This is wild because it's about our democracy. And something happened, and I'm really intrigued to hear Tom and Tash weigh in on this. Can you explain what Bill 81 is and why there was such a kerfuffle about it?
Yeah, so it's the Election Statutes Amendment Act, which probably means nothing. But at the end of the day, what it is the government of Alberta, the United Conservative government here, trying to pass almost American-style legislation to block the other side from winning. And how are they doing that? Well, they're usurping union donations. Of course, I'm someone who's worked on union campaigns in the past, so I'll try to make this as unbiased as possible, but that's just not it. There's so much more. They've allowed nomination campaigns to now have a surplus that can go to general party reserves. They're saying that, you know, you don't need to actually buy your own membership. Other people can sign it for you. And at the end of that, and this is just, I'm giving you a small list, but at the end of the day, what it is a political party in power down in the polls trying to tweak and twerk the laws in order to get a strategic edge against their principal political opponent. And this is not what we see here. This is not what we do here. It's the cliche, but we do not do this in Canada. But here we are seeing this late at night being debated in the halls of Alberta. And I'm sure the rest of the country is kind of looking at it and perhaps taking lessons.
Tom, I'm always wary of a party in power facing an election suddenly changing the goalposts on how elections are run. That just doesn't smell good.
Well, we had one such party in Ottawa under Stephen Harper, and his minister was Pierre Poilievre, and he came up with a whole bunch of changes to the Election Act. He was going to make it far more difficult. This is about voter suppression very often, making it harder for people who don't necessarily walk around with all these IDs on them. Because guess what? There's some people at the lowest rung of the ladder who don't carry all the same ID and for whom all of these steps make it difficult and it just discourages them from voting. In the event, Harper was forced to back down because editorial opinion and public opinion was really starting to take hold even more against Harper on this one. Then, of course, when you have somebody as divisive as Pierre Poilievre trying to push the file, it cinched it for the opponents. But I think the same thing will happen in Alberta. I think that there's a sense of fairness that is a really good Canadian feeling that you get sometimes. And it doesn't matter whether you're on the left or the right of the political spectrum. It's just like, this is not on. You can't do that.
But
that's
they did
cheating.
But I think, I know I got a minute here, they did it. It passed. I think the ledge isn't sitting until February now. Tash.
Yeah, the idea that there was, you know, no cap on donations at all.
I think it's now a $4,000 cap.
$4,000. It's still quite a bit. But yeah, initially, nothing. That alone is a big flag. I think it's every time you try and introduce rules, you have to be, I don't say fairer than fair, but otherwise you do either run the risk of being criticized for it, I think in this case legitimately, or simply, yes, you can sometimes make it more difficult for groups of voters to engage in the political process, which should not be the goal. And if it is, then this bill should be changed, which it already is being changed.
All right. I got to let it be because with Tom, Tash, and Zane, because Ivor Davis, who knew the Beatles for 40 years intimately, is on the phone to talk about the Beatles.
Nice.
So I've got to get back.
Glad
so I have
the opening
let
act.
It be. I need some help.